And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. We welcome you guys back to this joyous breakdown edition of a 54.
Beatdown edition. Beatdown edition.
A boat racing edition, because this is your Row the Boat leader in Gopher football podcast knowledge. Yes. A boat race. This wasn't no oars in the water. This was a 150 horsepower four-stroke Johnson going past the state of Nebraska, a 54-21 drumming at home for your Golden Gopher squad. And joining us back from hiatus from Saskatoon, somewhere near Toronto, somewhere up near the Arctic Circle, I can only presume, is former Golden Gopher offensive lineman, my second cousin. We share the same last name. It's the best last name on the east side of Ireland. That is Mr. Derek Burns. Derek, how are things for you, and how much did you enjoy watching back that 54-21 drumming?
I'm doing well, guys, and yeah, it was fun to see a lot of the frustrations, I think, taken out for the offense, taken out on Nebraska. You know, they were able to capitalize on just about every drive, and it was not an explosive game. Really checked all the boxes, a lot of touchdowns, explosive gains, yet also consistency. A lot of different things work, so it was exciting.
The offense literally did everything that they hadn't been doing in Big Ten play. Like, coming into this game, Minnesota's offense ranked as the second worst explosive team in the country. You look at their chunk plays from Saturday; they had 15 plays over 15 yards, including Demery Croft deciding that he is going to run as fast as he can for as far as he can, and Nebraska is going to decide to run as far away from him as possible. And then Minnesota scores 20 total points in their last two games. They see how much success Michigan has running the ball against them, and the offense says, well, anything you can do, I can do better. I can do anything better than you. That Michael Jordan commercial back from the 90s, I believe, in the rushing game puts up 409 yards of running offense, 6 rushing touchdowns. We'll get into it here with a little bit later with Derek. But, yeah, this was a coming out party for this Gopher offense with Demery Croft at the helm, Luke.
Well, you know, they came out fast and furious right from opening kickoff, an untouched kickoff return touchdown for Rodney Smith. Derek, you and I have criticized the kick return team numerous times, I believe. At least I've criticized them numerous times in their inability, and go figure, they housed one.
Yeah, great blocking up the middle on the kick return first play of the game. I think we talked about it briefly before we started tonight. I don't think he was touched, didn't have to break a tackle. In fact, the other returner who led the way didn't get touched either. So it was not only was a good job, but it was a big surprise. And that obviously got things. It's fun to get a little bit of jolt when you're playing at home, you know, to start off the game. And, you know, that set the tone and got things in motion for him. It was nice to see.
So obviously, you know, Nebraska, they're not a great defensive team, right? But Minnesota was very, very effective on offense this week, Derek. So help me understand, was this more a function of Nebraska not being very good defensively, or things coming together offensively for the Gophers, or maybe just in general, what's generally different about this game than their previous struggles?
Well, I think a little bit of both. You know, many times that's the answer, you know, probably contains a little bit of a mixture of both. But I think a couple things stand out to me. The Gophers offensive coaches, I thought, really schemed to attack the outside linebackers from Nebraska. So when Nebraska's game plan going in was to use those outside linebackers to defend the run, you know, out of a run look and run down in distances, and yet have those guys drop back and try and defend the middle of the field and the mid to outside portions of the field and the pass look. So a couple things they did was you saw they went back to running draw. They knew that out of a run look, out of a pass look, those guys were going to bail into coverage. And that opened up the draw, because then it really isolated the middle linebackers having to tackle the Gopher running backs in space. And then, in the same vein, that they stuck with play action for most of the game, even as the score got higher and higher, the Gophers mixed in a lot of play action because, again, they wanted to draw those outside linebackers in. and get those receivers behind him. So I thought it was a very good game plan they had, and they mixed in just about every part of the running game that they've added this year. So inside zone, jet sweep, misdirection toss, outside zone, pin and pull, just about everything. Lead up, speed option, they ran a couple times. And then the other part of it, which is, you know, part of the other part of the question you asked was, I don't think Nebraska executed well at all in any phase on defense. I thought the Gophers were able to take advantage of them being misaligned several times, just didn't get numbers lined up correctly to the strength. And then, you know, in the running game, much like the Gophers have struggled in some of these previous games, the secondary run support and run fits were just much to be desired for Nebraska, and just they weren't able, didn't put themselves in a position to make good open field tackles, and the Gophers were able to capitalize on that.
I thought this past game against Nebraska was the best run blocking performance I've seen from the tight ends, more specifically. Nate Wozniak and Brandon Lingen did a fantastic job all game, either getting out into space and trying to block a slot corner, a safety, an outside linebacker, or the end of line tight end did a great job of just kind of sealing the lane, kicking out again the back or the end, and providing Rodney Smith or Demery Croft or Kobe McCrary somewhere to go. So, again, I want to give a shout-out to those two guys, Brandon Lingen and Nate Wozniak. Plus, again, we talked about the kickoff return. That couldn't have happened without Colton Beebe and Coe Keefe. Again, those two were the two key blocks setting up the wall there. They both kick out their guys. Kobe McCrary was untouched as the lead man for 100 yards. Rodney Smith, I think, had one hand get on his shoulder pad, but he never broke stride. And it's just it's funny because you've heard us talk about on this podcast many times. Luke has brought it up that, you know, the return game has left a lot to be desired for most of this entire season for Minnesota. And then the opening kickoff against Nebraska, Rodney Smith is untouched for 100 yards to pay dirt. So, but back to the offensive side of the ball, when you kind of look at Demery Croft, I thought that, again, you want to have him make a progression from game one to game two to game three, and this being his fourth start, this was obviously his best performance to date. I think both in the passing and running game, but more importantly, he was an extremely competent player and he was very decisive. I think you see that with the amount of throws he was able to make. Again, 9 of 15 for 105 yards doesn't look great on paper, but when you go back and you watch the tape, I believe there were four drops and two throwaways, so... Again, there's not a whole lot else he can do. You know, one of these days, Derek, Minnesota will win a 50-50 ball, maybe 20% of the time. I know that I put out on the Twitter machine that, you know, maybe one of these days Minnesota will win a 50-50 ball 50% of the time. But let's start with baby steps. Again, Rome wasn't built in one day, neither was the Gopher football new practice facility. So let's just ask for 15% of the time Minnesota wins a 50-50 ball, because I'm thinking of right at the end of the first half, Demery Croft puts two very catchable balls up to Tyler Johnson. He's not able to reel either one of them in. The second one, a little bit more catchable to me than the first. You also have, you know, Tyler Johnson dropping the ball. I believe it was a post. And then you had the one that's going to bug me is the Rashad Steele one. Because, yes, he did get held, but he never attempted to get through it and then find the ball. Because if you go back and you watch that play, Demery Croft puts it so much on the money where Rashad Steele is held, and then he's looking to the back judge to complain about it. He puts out his right hand, and the point of the ball hits him right in the hand. And he's like, I could have caught that. Yeah, no, you know, bleep, Rashad Steele, you could have caught that and then ran 50 yards to the house. Come on, man. Yeah. Come on.
Well, there was also Lingen had a drop, too. I mean, it wasn't an easy catch, but it was a drop nonetheless.
No, that's one you have to make. So, again, Demery has gotten zero help from his pass catchers the last three starts. I believe I have Minnesota at 11 drops in their last three games, and Derek was mentioning it to me in the pre-production meeting that I think in the first six games of the season, Minnesota had like three drops. Now they have like three or four a game right now. So, again, I think it's a lot of mental things going on for this receiving core. They know that they're dropping balls and know that they're not having a lot of success holding on to them. And Tyler Johnson almost dropped another one. But, I mean, if he catches that one clean, again, Minnesota goes RPO. They draw on the linebackers, and Tyler Johnson's in man coverage over the top on a post. And if he catches it clean, I think he's still running all the way to Dinkytown, heading to Blarney's and then to Mesa Pizza afterwards. So, but I also want to give a shout-out. And to Derek, I'm going to pose this question to you. I mean, you look at Minnesota's rushing attack on the day, 409 rushing yards, 6 rushing touchdowns, over 9 yards a carry. I think when you take out the sacks, it's adjusted to 9.6 yards per carry. But some of these holes that Rodney Smith, Kobe McCrary, and even Demi Croft at times had to run through were enormous, and it was clear that between the tight ends, the tackles, the guards, and the center, Minnesota was having a lot of success up front. So when you look at the kind of big day that Minnesota had on the ground, when you're an offensive lineman, you run the ball 45 times, you're over 400 yards rushing. When you're out there in the second, third, and fourth quarter, I mean, do you know how well you're doing, how much you're getting movement up front, how much you're owning the man across the line of scrimmage from you, and how much does that kind of give you a boost knowing that you guys are having a lot of success? You know, you're beating the guy across from you each and every time. Is that a big, you know, boost to this offensive line? Or when you have these big running days like this, what is the offensive lineman's mentality as the day goes on?
Well, yeah, you kind of have the machine mentality that you want to build up momentum and just, you know, kind of become unstoppable as the game goes on. I mean, that's the goal anyway. And so the first thing you notice is if you're getting to the next level and getting those blocks at the next level, you know, things are generally going pretty well. Obviously, you know, it's obvious to state it, but if you're not, and you know, defense is getting penetration and they're playing on your side of the line of scrimmage, you know, it's going to be a long day. So, and that was, I think, evident on Saturday that, you know, Nebraska likes to run a 3-4. They did go with some 4 down linemen, but, the tough part of that is if you're able to get, if they're able to let offensive linemen downfield to block to the second level, you really have to, you know, lean on your secondary to make plays in the running game. And so it was, I'm sure, a fun game. It's when you run that much, it's exhausting. I'll say that. It's a lot of work, but it's fun. It's rewarding. You know, rather than 2 yards in a cloud of dust, it's fun to get to the next level and be a part of some of those explosive gains.
Well, when you look at those explosive gains, more specifically, Derek, you know, the two that stick out to me are Demi Croft's 2 long runs. One was off read option. He keeps it, and then he unfortunately forgets that poor Nebraska safety has a family, and he leaves him in the dust. His jockstrap is still sitting at TCF Bank Field's 26-yard line, and then he runs in a straight line right down the middle of the field, 73. And then I believe the other long run, Derek, was on speed option where the edge gets caught in space, doesn't make a decision on who he's going to go after, and he's in no man's land, and no decision means Demi Croft's just going to keep it, turn it up, and go 63. So what did you see in the option game, both read option, speed option, that was so successful for Minnesota on Saturday?
Yeah, they ended up, they had a lot of success, especially in short yardage situations, because I believe the Gophers offensive coaches picked up a tendency for Nebraska to run blitz in those situations. And so much like a goal line situation, when you're run blitzing, you're giving up your gap integrity. And so if you run something like a read option or a speed option, that you force the defense to have gap integrity. Everybody has to defend their gap because that play is going to find the undefended gap. And so I was really pleased. You know, I've talked to you guys before, but I'm a huge fan of speed option on the goal line or short yardage because of that very thing. So the Gophers ended up running it a couple times to the weak side because they, again, I think had through film study had schemed the Nebraska had loaded the other side of the line of scrimmage or the other side of the center. And so they ran it to the weak side and they know they only had one contained defender. So you option that guy and force him to choose, you know, you're going to have the ball carrier untouched to at least the secondary. And as you mentioned in the read option, that they caught them in a couple times in a run blitz, which is a cover 0 look. So if you're able to make that one guy miss, that one secondary, in this case a safety, there's nobody behind him. So I was able to spring that for an incredible move that he put on and was able to spring it for a touchdown.
You know, watching this, it's a little bit frustrating to think back to a couple of the games, specifically maybe Maryland, maybe Purdue, and just the fact that, you know, Demery had to be suspended and what maybe could have been not, and this is no knock to Connor Rota, but, you know, he is a little bit more limited athletically, but to see how decisive Demery has been in making decisions, especially in a game like this, it's just an added bonus to have that element where he can take off and run and they have to be accountable. And not saying that the Gophers would have 2 more wins or maybe even 3 more wins, wins, but I think very possibly, you know, this maturation could have come maybe a little bit more quickly, but it very well could have resulted in more wins. I'd be curious, Derek, to get your thoughts on just Demery in his maturation as a quarterback thus far.
Yeah, a couple things that I think, you know, looking at it from the defense's perspective, that become really tough to defend and kind of become deadly. The zone read keeps and things like that are something that are a little bit more visible, a little bit more obvious. But specifically, his ability to sit when he's on his game, to sit in the pocket, go through his progressions, and if nobody's there, to step up. The Gophers have had very good pass blocking the whole year. To be able to step up and take the ball and run for a first down, that's just very, very difficult to defend. And unless you take a defender and you dedicate him to spy the quarterback, which takes you, you know, one less guy at a pass defense, that provides a whole new element that is very difficult. And I don't think you have to do it 8 times a game. You just have to pick up 2 or 3 key, you know, second and long or third down conversions with that. And that can be the difference, you know, to keeping a drive going. And yep. The other thing that I think is worth mentioning is not just his abilities that have developed, but also just seeing the playbook open up, you know, as the year has gone on. And whether that's, I think that's partially having Demery in there, but I think it's also a function of just new coaching staff, new system, not trying to put too much on early. I think Ryan has talked about they had like 2 healthy offensive linemen in spring ball. I think they were really behind the 8 ball early in the year, being able to implement some of these run plays. And, you know, about midseason on, you've seen them add a pin and pull outside zone, a misdirection toss, and just that adding that breadth and widening up the playbook. I you know, I sound like a broken record, but you're forcing the defense to defend the whole field. If you think back, when you mentioned that, Luke, think back to some of those early games, and I'm thinking, you know, they ran inside zone, maybe one other running play, and, you know, a handful of passing route trees, and that was it. I mean, if those didn't work and the defense was able to stop those, it was a tough day for them.
Something PJ talked about in the press conference afterwards, I forget, I think it was Chip Scroggins of the Star Tribune asked the question about what was different with Demery. And I was asking, you know, did you guys add more to the playbook? And PJ's response was actually, we got the playbook much shorter this week. It was much more simplified for Demery trying to run Minnesota's offense here against Nebraska. And I think that's something that folks need to know is we still haven't even seen what the offense is going to look like in 2 years. You know, as a quarterback here is in year 2 or 3 in the system. Kirk Schrocken feels comfortable enough to kind of really open it up. The wide receivers are more comfortable. The running backs are more comfortable. And so they simplified things this week for Demery. And, you know, with the way he was able to be decisive when, you know, say, you know, he's, you know, I'm thinking of the 2nd and 11 play. Minnesota's, I believe, at the Nebraska 30. Minnesota goes, I believe, play action. Demery has it. Doesn't see anybody open downfield. He doesn't panic. He doesn't sit in the pocket too long. He sees it's man coverage across the board, which means the backs of the defenders are going to be to you. So you can run. And he was able to do that very effectively for 183 yards, 3 touchdowns. I believe that the stat he broke was the most rushing yards for a Gopher quarterback since Marquise Gray. And again, it's crazy for me to say that Demery Croft has 183 rushing yards and 3 touchdowns because he is much more of a pocket passer than Mitch Leidner ever was, than Chris Streveler ever was. You know, he wants to sit in the pocket and deliver a throw downfield. That's what he would prefer to do, but he knows that he's athletic enough to turn it upfield. And when folks forget to defend him on whether that is the speed option or the read option, he's able to make one man miss and he's able to get north and south in a hurry. So, it was good to see from Demery. Now, the issue is for Minnesota's offense, it's not going to get any easier in the final 2 games. They face a white-hot Northwestern Wildcats team coming up on Saturday. Minnesota opened as a 7-point road dog tonight. Nebraska's won 5 straight games. And then at the end of the season, the Badgers come to town, potentially undefeated. We'll see how they stack up against the Wolverines this weekend. But that defense is something fierce, especially what they put on tape against Iowa last weekend. So I don't anticipate another 54-point performance. I'd be through the roof if Minnesota is able to put up, you know, combined for 54 points in their next 2 games. So again, a ceiling game for Minnesota's offense. anytime you put up 54 points, 514 yards of total offense, you don't turn the ball over. It's going to be a good night of sleep for Kirk Shiroka. Now, the tough thing for Minnesota is, can they do it again in some kind of capacity like this in the next 2 weeks? We'll have to see what Luke and I think about that come on Thursday.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about the Gopher defense. You know, they're coming off a game against Michigan where they get absolutely decimated in the run game. If you sniff the box score here in the Nebraska game, they only give up 69 yards on 33 attempts, a 2.1 yard average. But quite frankly, I mean, you know, they only gave up what, 24 points, but they kind of got beat around in the pass game. I guess maybe from my perception, and this is probably this is.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, you're 100% right.
Yeah, I mean, if their offense wasn't on fire, they conceivably really could have lost this game based on their defensive performance. And we know this, the limitations they have in the defensive backfield, you know, given injuries with like Antoine Winfield Jr., et cetera, you know, the whole expulsion situation and how that set them back. But, you know, this defense, while it at times has been good, it's still not great, Derek. And boy, especially in the pass game, I thought on Saturday they really struggled.
Yeah, they wanted to run a lot of man coverage. I think they ended up running a little bit more zone as the game went on because they struggled. And I think if I had to diagnose it, I think the having, you know, they've talked about it, and they talk about it during each game, having these guys, the third and fourth string guys, and they're playing out of position and things like that. You've got safeties playing corner and corners playing safety. I think it's catching up with them a little bit because not only are they having, you know, some struggles just covering guys and keeping up, but they had a couple big mental breakdowns as well. You know, early in the game, they had left a guy wide open on a coverage bust, and then Nebraska's second touchdown of the game, a post over the middle, safety was out of position, either the safety or the corner, I don't know which, had a busted coverage. So that was disappointing to see because they have their work cut out for them already to be able to play, you know, mano a mano with, you know, defending guys, even if they're in position because of their depth issues. But looked like they were out of position and had some busted coverages as well. So that's something that they've got to keep, they've got to stay on it and maybe take a page out of the offensive side and try and simplify things a little bit for these last couple games because the depth issues certainly aren't going to be resolved. And they've shown, you know, flashes here and there of guys being able to play, you know, and you know, do better than expected. But I think that, you know, Ryan and I were talking briefly before we came on tonight, and I think that had the game not turned so one-sided because the offense, you know, scoring touchdown after touchdown, might have been a really long day for the defense, to be honest. It might have been a back and forth, you know, 38-37 or 42-41 game.
A Big 12 shootout at TCFA Stadium.
Defense seems optional in the Big 12 this year. I don't know about you guys, but it totally looks optional.
It's optional in the Big 12. It is always optional. Every game is 45-42, 51-48. But as Derek noted, I mean, Minnesota's secondary, I didn't think played much better than they did against Michigan. The good thing about it for Gopher fans is it didn't matter because the offense was so efficient on the day. And Luke, I don't know if we've talked about this yet. You know, Minnesota didn't win the time of possession on Saturday.
Yeah.
It was Nebraska 31, Minnesota 29. Nebraska ran more plays than Minnesota's offense. And Minnesota was just so hyper efficient with their drives. They got points on 7 of their 8 drives with Demery Croft. And then Connor Rota comes in and Kobe McCrary is able to go right up the gut for a long touchdown. So you look at on my University of Minnesota education is correct. Minnesota got points on 9 of their 10 drives. And so we come back to the defense. Whether it was Tanner Lee for a half or he doesn't come out of the locker room to start the third quarter, so Nebraska switches quarterbacks, the Nebraska quarterbacks on the day completed 70% of their passes for over 300 yards and a touchdown. And it would have been even more than that if they, as Derek noted, if they didn't go so one-sided. And there are just far too many just broken plays. I mean, I think Derek mentioned the one where You know, Kunle Ayinde. So Minnesota's in man coverage. They're in cover one. So Duke McGee is in the center of the field overseeing everything. The corners and the linebackers are in man coverage. And Ayinde, for whatever reason, thinks he has the inside tight end of two tight ends. And it's a strange thing to watch back on tape. And it ends up in Pearsonell being wide open for 45 yards. I just didn't think that Kunle Ayinde played particularly well. I think they picked on him all game. And the other thing that was the biggest head scratcher of the day for this Gopher defense for me, I couldn't figure out for the life of me why Duke McGee was in man coverage with J.D. Spielman the entire game.
Nope.
Because J.D. Spielman is 5'9", 175. Duke McGee is 6'1", 210, 215 pounds. So Duke is 4 inches taller, and he's giving up 35 pounds or so to a shiftier, more explosive player, yet you continue to put him in the slot on man coverage. Now, the matchup I would have loved to have seen all day if he was healthy was Antoine Winfield, because I think that would have been Minnesota strength against Nebraska strength. That would have been a lot of fun to watch on tape. But Spielman just abused McGee all day long, and Minnesota really never adjusted to it. There were a couple of times where Minnesota just sat back in zone at times, and Spielman found the soft spot in the zone. J.D. Spielman, the former Eden Prairie Eagle, puts up 291 total yards on the Golden Gophers. And before you tweet me or ask me on Gopher Illustrated, like numerous people have, you know, some people are like, why isn't J.D. Spielman a Gopher? Why didn't Fleck get him? Okay, number one, E.J. Fleck wasn't here for that. Number two, that was one of the biggest misses for Tracy Clays and Jerry Kill. Was they decided to take Tyler Johnson, Philip Howard, and Drew Himaleski in state receivers that year, and they didn't take J.D. Spielman with them because they cooled on him. So did Michigan, and really the only spot he had left was Nebraska, and it seems to be working out pretty well for him, considering he put up 200 receiving yards on Ohio State, and he absolutely torched Minnesota on Saturday, Luke.
Wasn't he also like a dual sport athlete? Like, he was committed to play lacrosse too, right? Like at Ohio State or something?
Yep, up until his sophomore year, and then he decided he wanted to play football. And then the offers came in, and then but Minnesota cooled on him, and it's a miss. And EJ was asked about it in the press conference afterwards, and he got frankly pretty angry about it because, and it went into this big long spiel about that we need to have the best players stay home. J.D. Spielman, we shouldn't be playing against him, but that was one of the issues for Minnesota's defense. Was yes, the stats look good. You know, Minnesota does get 10 tackles for loss, 6 sacks on the day, 3 of them coming on the final 3 plays of the game as Mike Riley decides to call 3 timeouts down 33. And Minnesota responds with 3 straight sacks. But, you know, I guess, we don't mean to just rag on the defense here because, you know, they did shut down the run. Luke mentioned it. You know, 33 carries for 69 yards. It's just over 2 a carry. That's terrible for Nebraska. That's very good for Minnesota. But Derek mentioned it. If this game script could have stayed close, I think Nebraska, or if Tanner Lee could have stayed in the entire game, I think J.D. Spielman would have went really nuts. We're talking like 11 for 200 or something. But again, Minnesota's secondary is having a significant amount of issues because there's multiple broken plays. And again, these aren't true freshmen making these making these mistakes. Kunle Ayinde is a fifth-year senior. Duke McGee, again, you're putting him in a tough spot trying to guard J.D. Spielman. You know, Antonio Chenault has certainly had his struggles this year, but again, he's dealing with some injuries. But this Gopher secondary, I didn't think played too much better. Now, in terms of in the pass game, because in run support, I thought Duke McGee played actually a lot better against the run than he did in the previous week, which was very good to see, and he made a couple of key stops, including on a couple of fourth downs. But when you look at this, you know, the final two games of the year, thankfully, Alex Hornibrook is not very good for that Wisconsin team. Again, he's the only reason that Iowa scored points. He threw 2 pick sixes against the Hawkeyes. Clayton Thorson next week for Northwestern. They have a very good pass-catching core, so I'm a little bit nervous about that. So we'll have to see how it plays out, but I thought the big boys up front, Derek, did a lot better. I thought that, again, stop asking me about Steven Richardson and where he is, because he was about a half step away on 4 different pass rushes from getting home on a sack. On that key fourth down stop, the first time him and Gary Moore blew it up, allowing Duke McGee to come in untouched. And then I thought Carter Coughlin played really well against the run. So what did you think of Minnesota's performance in terms of up front against this Nebraska offensive line?
Yeah, I thought they played much better against the run. You know, the previous week they got caught, you know, versus Michigan over pursuing on a lot of the running plays, which left, you know, certainly left them vulnerable against counter and some of the cutbacks on ISO and on power. This particular game, you could see that Nebraska had schemed for that. They had watched the tape, and so they ran a lot of inside zone, but gave the handoff backside and tried to take advantage of the linebackers cheating front side. And either the linebackers played better in some cases, and then in other cases, the secondary played better, a lot better with their run fit. So those you know, even little things like the first, you know, quarter, Nebraska's maybe getting four or five or six on some of those run plays, but, you know, the secondary is coming up and making a fit. And those were the, you know, 40 and 35 and 60 yard carries, you know, again, rushes against Michigan. So little victories in the beginning of the game. And then I think a really, you know, key turning point, you mentioned it, Ryan, was the fourth down, you know, big stop by the Gophers to kind of turn the momentum. Really nice play by Carter Coughlin. You know, we talked early on in the year about, you know, had questions about him in the run game. And I think he's shown great improvement in the run game as the year's gone on. He has a nice pass rushing ability and a knack for rushing the passer and covering space. But I think he's gotten better and better against the run. He was able to get penetration and seal the edge on a couple of run plays, which really helped because that funneled things back in, that big fourth down stop that Duke McGee came up. You mentioned that the D tackles got penetration. He also blew the offensive tackle up to steal the running back so he couldn't bounce it outside, and that funneled it back to Duke McGee. So, you know, wasn't perfect in the run game, but a huge improvement over the previous week. And, you know, I thought did enough to hold things tight until, like we mentioned, later in the game when they had to become one-dimensional. And then things got fun for the defensive line because they could pin their ears back and they could start throwing some twists and stunts and other schemes to get pressure on the quarterback, and that's always fun for those guys.
All right, so I'm just, unless you guys have other things you want to talk defensively, you know, this is typically when we'd maybe talk some special teams. There's not really a lot of special teams other than the kick return to cover, just because, you know, punt-wise, you know, Santos only had one punt.
Minnesota's best player from last week only got to touch the ball one time.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Travesty.
Yeah.
What is PJ Fleck doing? Ryan Santos only one punt on the day?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
And it wasn't a very good punt, actually. Like, it was a combination of not a great punt slash not great coverage because they had a chance to knock that down inside the five, and it rolls into the end zone. So that was disappointing. And then, you know, Emmett Carpenter was fine. He was his steady old 2 of 2. But I guess I wanted to slightly change topics. And, you know, looking at the season now, you're down to the last two games. The Gophers are sitting at 5-5. I'm curious to get your assessment at this point, you know, before we go into these last two games. Is 5-5 a successful season for a first-year coach and PJ Fleck in this 2017 Golden Gophers? I'll throw it to you first, Derek.
Oh boy, that could be a long answer. It's you have to throw everything into it. You know, the injuries they've suffered. You know, a lot of the changes they've had this year. If I'm being honest, I think if they could go back, I'd like to see them win the Maryland or the Purdue game. You know, before the season, I kind of thought 6 wins was my expectation, and that's not. I'm being honest. That's not revisionist history. So. I think if they had another, you know, win in one of those two early games, I think was winnable. I think things fit a little bit better. So, but they have a chance to make that up. You know, one of these last two games, if they're able to come away with a victory, then I think then it's definitely a success in my eyes.
Jeez, that was a deep question. All right, Luke. All right.
Sorry.
So we're going to get into that.
Well,
so,
I feel like, you know, the overwhelming conclusion is they got no chance against Wisconsin, right? And you know, it's less than 50-50, probably more like 35-65 in the Northwestern game. I think it's interesting to talk about, how well do you think they've done to this point? And I guess what makes it all the more interesting is, PJ, from my perspective, PJ talks culture, right? And the more I've been sitting on this weekend after the win, they had a chance to be better, and he instituted his culture first and foremost with his suspensions. He totally could have let things slide and maybe won a game or two more, but he sat on his morals.
He did, and I commend him for that. Knowing what these guys did behind the scenes to get some of these suspensions, I can tell you that I don't think that they would have been suspended if Tracy Clays was here, and I'm glad they were suspended now that PJ Fleck is here. Because, again, everybody has to be held accountable, whether you're on the offensive side of the ball, the defensive side of the ball, or whether you're a specialist. Everybody has to be held to the same standard. And you mentioned it, how different is it if Demaryius Croft gets the start against Purdue instead of Connor Rota? Or, Teyon Devers is able to get off to a hotter start. By the way, Teyon Devers did register his first sack of the season late in that fourth quarter against Nebraska, so he gets off the schneid there. Duke McGee is out. Donnell Green is benched for the first series against Nebraska. For me, this season is just about what happened in the secondary, because we talked about it extensively coming into the season, Luke, about how if Minnesota was going to win seven games like I thought they were very much capable of doing, they were going to have to stay healthy in the secondary. Well, we're looking at where Minnesota's at now. Their best secondary player has been out since the non-conference. Antonio Chenault has missed time. Keandre Thomas has missed time. Jacob Huff is banged up. We've seen Justice Harris burn his red shirt, and he certainly doesn't look ready for Big Ten ball. And the secondary just hasn't been playing as well as we thought they were going to play. Minnesota's offensive line has been resilient. With Jared Weiler, the news today that he is going to be out for the remainder of the season with a foot injury. So Minnesota is without their starting center. Garrison Wright went down with it looks like a hand injury. Minnesota was still able to put up 514 yards of total offense. The biggest thing coming into the season was the wild card of quarterback. Now, Minnesota's quarterbacks hadn't been playing particularly well throughout the Big Ten schedule, and that's a huge reason why Minnesota's sitting here 5-5 right now instead of 6-4 instead of 7-3, because if they get better and more consistent quarterback play, I think that they're able to pull out a couple of those close games against teams such as Maryland, Iowa, Purdue come immediately to me off the top of my head. I'd like to see Minnesota win at least one, maybe two of those games, but that's where we are. Minnesota's lacked quarterback talent here for many years. The reason PJ Fleck is here to fix that. Minnesota's receiver position has really struggled of late. There's a reason Matt Simon is here and PJ Fleck's here to fix that. The offensive line hasn't had an offensive lineman drafted since I think Derek was in school. That needs to change. So there's a lot of different things with this Gopher team that didn't go right this year, or they haven't gone right. Minnesota still persevered and won five games or so. Yeah, I agree that it probably should be more than that, especially if they got anything from their offense and during Big Ten play outside of this Nebraska game. But I also think you have to be realistic about it. And it just hasn't been what we thought it was going to be for the offense, because for about the first seven games of the season, the defense played about well enough in each one of them to win the game. And Minnesota didn't have enough wins to show for it. So it is what it is in terms of with injuries, in terms of with guys on this team not living up to expectations, in terms of off the field and them being suspended because of it. And we'll have to see how the last two games play out, because, again, there's a chance that Minnesota makes a bowl game as 5-17. The only two teams ahead of them right now are Vanderbilt and Duke. In terms of on the APR, Andy Greeter had a fantastic article about it. So if you're curious about that, you can check out his work at the Pioneer Press. So Minnesota, Duke, and Vanderbilt went into last night's game in terms of on Saturday. All 4-5 teams, Minnesota won, and Duke and Northwestern lost, or Duke and Vanderbilt lost. Now, if either one of those two teams win one of their final two games, they'll bump ahead of Minnesota. So I have to see how it plays out. But, again, it's something to monitor here, as maybe we're making another return trip to Detroit, Luke.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Any last thoughts, guys? Otherwise, I'll take us out. I'm gonna take
Derek, you got anything?
Yeah, well, one thing I just wanted to mention on the special teams, I thought that for as many kickoffs, because the scoring that the Gophers had, I thought they did a good job keeping Spielman in check on kick returns. He might be the Big Ten's best kick returner, and I thought
seven
they did
returns for only 21 yards.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
A very good job in that regard.
Yeah, so hats off to that team as well.
I also want to make sure I shout out Thomas Barber, led the team in total tackles again. He had two key pass breakups on third down situations. He continues to, in my opinion, be Minnesota's best linebacker. He has been the entire season. I think that Jonathan Celestine, you're seeing that injury to his elbow there come into play more and more often. And if Blake Cashman is healthy, and that's going to be something to monitor if he is healthy, because he came off lame in the fourth quarter there, I think Blake Cashman absolutely has to be playing over Jonathan Celestine. Because it's very clear to me when you watch the tape over the last couple of games that elbow is really bothering him. And Cashman is just playing at a different speed and a different level than Celestine. Now, I know that they're kind of different players in terms of linebackers. Cashman a little bit smaller in terms of weight-wise than Celestine, but Cashman absolutely has the speed. So we're going to have to see if he's going to be able to earn more reps alongside Thomas Barber. I also would really like to see more of Kendarian Handy-Holly, especially with the struggles that Minnesota's had in their secondary. Maybe that was one of the options Minnesota should have went to, was put Handy-Holly on Spielman, just give it a little change of pace, because it was clear that McGee wasn't going to be doing a whole lot there. But again, this was the kind of game that puts a nail in the coffin of a head coach. There was a lot of discussion on Gopher Illustrated coming into this game that, is Mike Riley going to be fired after the season? Well, the performance from his team on Saturday tells me absolutely they will, because Nebraska had not mailed it in their previous four games. Even though they were 1-3, they were competitive in most of those games. They had been playing extremely hard, but you watch the tape in kind of the third and fourth quarter, it looked like the team started to quit, and the guys were just not running around as fast as they were in the first quarter. Maybe that's some of the game score, but again, you just let an anemic Minnesota offense put up 54 points on you. And a running offense put up over 400 yards against you. You have to take some pride there. So I don't see Mike Riley making it probably to Black Friday. We'll go Cyber Monday. I think Bill Moose, the new athletic director there, makes a change. So this would be the second straight time a Minnesota win over Nebraska puts the nail in the coffin of a head coach, because folks will remember that Minnesota's win over Bo Pelini in Nebraska. Again, I think it was Minnesota's first win at Nebraska since the 50s or 60s. That was with Jerry Kill down there. Bo Pelini was subsequently fired the next week. So we'll have to see how that goes. But again, we'll see how Minnesota does in their final two games, because it is going to get tough. Both teams are ranked. Wisconsin, obviously undefeated, coming to TCF Bank Stadium. And Derek, how sweet would that be to ruin an undefeated season for Wisconsin at home and get the axe back?
Hey, it's a rivalry game. There's a lot of those guys that cross borders and know people on both sides of the border. And so whatever the records are, it's going to be, there's going to be heated, it's a heated rivalry. So it'll be a fun game regardless. They've got their work cut out for them, but I know those guys, especially those upperclassmen, they're definitely going to be a little bit cranked up for that one.
Hey, Ryan, one last question for you. Does the university officially acknowledge the $5 Bits of Broken Chair trophy? Or
they do not. It was not even from talking with Gobi. They do not acknowledge it. They wouldn't even allow it to be in the stadium. The rumor was if they even tried to bring it into the stadium, they would be arrested.
That is so stupid.
That is not a PJ Fleck thing. That is a Minnesota administration thing. So that should surprise no one. So whether you think it's a trophy game or not, if it makes you happy, Minnesota won a trophy game, more power to you. But again, it's weird the way Minnesota just, the administration rejected it and whatnot. It's very strange. So
that's odd. Okay.
Either way, Minnesota's 5-5. They just put up 54 points at home. you should be very happy driving into work here on Monday morning.
Yeah. All right. Well, I want to thank everybody for listening. Make sure you check out Ryan's work on GopherIllustrated.com. Those GIF rewinds, I'm telling you, you guys, those things are elite. That might be worth the cost of a subscription alone. Additionally, check out Derek Burns' his work on Twitter. It is also, as our head coach would say, elite. It's Derek. Derek, what is your Twitter again? I can't remember.
Derek underscore S underscore Burns.
Okay. Derek underscore S underscore Burns. Again, thanks for listening, everyone, and go Gophers.